Now, Michael Toms interviews Neil Donald Walsh.
Neil, how has your life changed since writing the book Conversations with God, An Uncommon Dialogue?
Gosh, I think everything about my life is different. I have a relationship now that works, and works wonderfully. I have all the money anyone could ever ask for, frankly, to be honest. I have great health. I'm in far better health than ever I was before. But I think the most important thing, because those are all exterior, is that it feels very much as if the interior part of me is finally coming together, is finally being repaired, is finally, I hate to use the overworked word, but is finally being healed. I feel more one. I feel more one with myself, and I feel more at one-ment with everyone else and everything. It's a healing of the deepest part of me that I've waited for a long time. And that's, I think, the largest difference that I notice as a result of this book.
Do you have a spiritual practice now, a regular discipline that you follow?
Well, I'm not a very disciplined person. You know, when I was 27, they put a sign on the door outside my office, "Don't try to discipline this guy, just tap his genius." I used to laugh at that, but they never took it off the door. I worked at that place for 10 years. I think that they saw something in me that they made fun of, but that was really true, which was that I had, how do I say this without sounding arrogant, I had a level of awareness and creativity that might have been, by some people's measurement, at a genius level. I think many people do, for that matter. But I absolutely had no sense of discipline, nor do I hope I ever have any. It's probably not politically correct to say that. But if I had a bumper sticker I could create, it would be "Down with Discipline." And so I don't discipline myself. My spiritual practice in my everyday life is what it is when it is that, and it's not that when it's not. So I meditate except on days that I don't. And I move through certain physical exercises except on days when I don't. And I read a great many spiritual books except when I don't. And so I allow myself really to flow freely through my experience of self and through my experience of all the rest of this wonderful adventure that we are mutually embarked upon. And I don't really get too rigid with myself. I don't have schedules. I don't have a diet that I really stick to religiously, to use a probably bad word, but although I am careful with what I eat in some ways. So I'm not a terribly disciplined guy. I think there are probably two disciplines that I do adhere to. I don't drink any alcohol, and I don't smoke, and I haven't for years. And those are about the only disciplines I can think of, really, in my life.
Neil, have you always been interested in spiritual things?
Yes, I have. I have from the earliest days of my life. When I was 7 and 8 years old, I was asking my parents questions that they couldn't answer. They sent me to parochial school. I was educated in a Roman Catholic school. And I would ask the nuns and the priests who would come in. Once a week, the priests would come in and teach catechism. And I would ask the priests and the pastor of the parish questions that he couldn't answer. And when I was 9 or 10 or 11, those pastors began saying to me, "Why don't you come out over to the rectory? We can talk about this some more." And they would actually invite me into their study. And I would talk theology with the priests when I was 10 and 11 years old. Now, obviously, it wasn't high theology, but it was high theology for an 11-year-old, without a doubt. And I asked all kinds of questions that provoked interesting conversations, like, how do we know truly what is right and wrong?
You were raised Roman Catholic and eventually left the church. Why did you leave?
Well, of course, it wasn't a decision that one makes overnight or in a split second. It was a cumulative thing. It was a cumulative thing that happened over a period of years, my movement away from the church. But I think what really broke it for me was in my early 20s. Oh, I was about 23 or 24, somewhere in there. I picked up a newspaper and I realized that something astonishing had happened. The Roman Catholic Church had announced that eating meat on Fridays was no longer a sin. Now, you might say, well, what's the problem? Except that through all of my young years, when I was was 8, 9, 10 years old. I had been a very devout young Catholic boy, and I was very, very serious about following all the rules, including never sinning. And one of the things I didn't do for all the years of my youth was I never ate meat on Fridays. And there were many times when I had to miss a lot of joy and fun because I couldn't eat meat on Fridays, and everyone else around me was going to the ballpark, for instance, and having a hot dog or whatever. And that's not a big deal, you know, in life, naturally. But in my life, it was. And what I noticed was that what this brought up for me was, oh, I get it. Right and wrong are a movable feast. Right and wrong, even the Roman Catholic Church changes its mind about what is or is not a sin. Well, if I thought that the Roman Catholic Church was going to change its mind from time to time about what was a sin and what was not a sin, what was right and wrong, I thought I'd better get out of that church. That church was a little bit too flexible for me, and that was said about all of religion.
After you disconnected from the Catholic Church, did you pursue other religions?
Yes, also having to do with the Roman Catholic Church. I was kicked out of the altar boys. And I was a very devout young Catholic boy, and I had intended to become a priest. And at the age of 12, I was surreptitiously removed, unceremoniously dumped from the local altar boy contingent at my parish. And the reason that I was fired, if you will, from the altar boys is that I arrived for a procession. We had a processional that all the altar boys were going to be in, carrying candles and the crucifix and so forth. And I was about 3 minutes late for that. Not too late to get into the procession, mind you, but too late for the Mother Superior, who was nominally in charge of organizing the altar boys. And because I came into the sanctuary a bit late to get on my chasuble and my robes, she said, you're no longer part of us. Well, that was you might think that's a petty little childhood event, but in fact, I couldn't imagine, because everyone, I think, had observed a great sense of devotion in me. And in that Catholic church, I was known as the one who had the calling. And they thought that I was going to become the next priest to emerge from that parish. Not taken lightly, I might add, in Catholic neighborhoods. And so for me to be dumped that way from the altar boys said more things to me about the nature of human churches and humanly constructed religions and our true relationship with God. Because I didn't feel any separation from God at all because I had been 3 minutes late. And I was literally 3 minutes late. But I did feel a great separation from my local parish church. And that really turned me away from Roman Catholicism, which was, I'm sure, an enormous turning point in my life. And having said that, I should add that I honor the Roman Catholic Church greatly, and I am very grateful to it because it brought me my earliest sense of the presence of something larger than myself in the universe. And it also taught me that honoring that larger part of the universe that existed outside of myself was not a bad thing to do. When I was 17 and 18 and emerging from high school and getting into college, I began looking once again at the question of religion and theology. And I moved into the Presbyterian Church and thought I would find a home there. And I did for a bit, and I was even asked by the congregation where I attended if they could send me to the seminary. And I would come back as an associate minister at that church for a number of years to pay back the loan they were actually going to give me money to go, because they saw, again, something inside of me. I'm not sure what it was, but it's been identified by a lot of people through the years that might be useful in such an occupation as the ministry. But the more I delved into the theological constructions of mainstream Protestantism, the more I began to realize that there, too, I could not be comfortable and could not find a home. And that really launched a 25-year investigation of virtually every spiritual tradition on the face of the earth, of which I am currently aware. And I looked really at them all, some more than others, but at least touching bases with all of them. I read a great deal of comparative theology. I spent days and weeks and months in the libraries around the country where I began moving because of my career. And I looked very deeply. I even had long conversations. I would sit down with rabbis and with... I sat down once for 2 days for a weekend with a man from the Middle East. And he explained a great many of the Middle Eastern Orthodox theologies. And so I began to get my mind deeply involved in the question of how human beings experience the gods, the various gods of their understandings, and if any one of those ways would be comfortable for me. And I have to say that I could find a complete comfort in none of those constructions.